In-depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for hour number two for Friday, April 9th, 2010 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And of course, the 2 o'clock hour on Friday afternoon means it's time for the Federal News Countdown. And happy to welcome in studio two experts in the world of the federal government and federal business. Frank Reeder is the founder of the Reeder Group and former director of the Office of Administration in the Executive Office of the President, among many other credentials in government, 20 years at the Office of Management and Budget. And Frank, it's great to have you in the studio here.
Always a pleasure, Francis.
You were supposed to be on the show in February under the weather. I pinch hit for you, and I'm very happy you're able to be here in person. You look much better today than you sounded when we had you on the phone for a couple of minutes.
Feeling much better
during the program. Glad to have you. And we will talk later on in the hour, too, about the big NAPA analysis of the Quadrennial Homeland Security Review. I got it right that time. I botched it when we were talking about it before we went on the air. But we'll talk about that later on in the hour, too. Although that's not one of our news stories. We have a great lineup of news stories. And your cohort on the panel this week is Bob Otto, Executive Vice President of Advisory Services at Agilex and the former Chief Information Officer at the Postal Service. And I didn't tell you before we went on the air, I need you to pull that mic a little closer to yourself there, Bob.
Not a problem.
I appreciate you being here as well. It's the last time you were here was when you were in studio with Karen Evans.
Absolutely.
She likes to come in every once in a while and kind of co-host with me a little bit. And you were saying before we went on the air that you think you might have crossed her up a little bit.
She hasn't talked to me since.
She hasn't? Well, I'll send her an email this afternoon and see if I can reconnect you guys. It is great to have both of you here. We have six terrific stories to talk about on the Federal News Countdown this week. And I'm surprised as this goes on, happily surprised, that each time I do this, I choose two people or three people like you gentlemen who know a lot about what's going on in the federal government, and yet we always get different stories. Different people have different worldviews and so on. And so it is fascinating to me to hear about the thought process that goes into the things that each of you think are important. So without further ado, we get on with this week's Federal News Countdown. Number three story of the week from Frank Reeder is from GovExec. It is headlined, Performance Czar Asks Agencies to Spruce Up Spending Data. And this is talking about the USAspending.gov and Jeff Zients telling the agencies they better get on something.
Yeah, the backstory here is kind of interesting because all of the Spending.gov initiative actually came out of a piece of legislation sponsored by then Senators Coburn and Obama. I think, I don't know what happened to Obama since, but
he seems to be in the news all the time.
Yeah,
though.
I guess they must be related.
Yeah.
But what Jeff is pointing out, and I think needed pointing out, is the notion that you can track federal spending by knowing what contract and granting agencies are giving out really tells only about 10% of the story. The problem is if you're trying to measure economic impact, you have to go down to the subcontract or sub-grantee level. The administration's running into the same problem looking at how one, for example, measures the job impact of the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. So I was delighted to see that Jeff is actually putting some pressure on the agencies. This is a hard problem, knowing where the money actually goes as opposed to those to whom he wrote the check.
Mm-hmm. I imagine with the kind of timeline that Jeff Zients is applying to this, Bob, that this is making people at the agencies a little bit crazy.
Yeah, in fact, it's a little unclear to me whether he's wanting to use the information to actively improve the performance of the government or just simply hit the mandate of making things transparent. Mm-hmm. What is it?
What the whole issue of transparency versus the accuracy of the data, too. Recall when all the information was first posted and Ed DeSeb told everybody, this information's going to have problems, we're going to need you to look it over, and yet still got a lot of feedback that was not positive about the fact that the information, the data wasn't clean. In that respect, it was a different project, of course, but same idea. And putting up this kind of data so quickly, as it appears they this is going to need to be done, has the potential, doesn't it, to yield the same result? You have a lot of data up there that's not necessarily been scrubbed.
Francis, do you ever go to a website and you see no relevance in it? Are you going to go back? And so going to this site and you find that the data isn't accurate, it's hard for a manager then to want to go back to the site 6 months later.
What about the accountability factor, too? I mean, as the amount of time that you spent at OMB, Frank, you know, if there's not some consequence at the end of this mandate, then it's, if it happens or doesn't happen, doesn't seem to matter as much when it comes to the if there's a priority to get some other day-to-day operation done. What do you see here as far as that goes?
Well, it's a question of follow-through. I mean, I'm not known for giving credit to the previous administration, but one of the things that I think the previous administration taught us was that when you held people to account, that is, when you called them to task, if they weren't getting to green, or in this case, if over time the agencies are responding with bad data, and that has consequences for them, it'll get better. One of the things, one of the few lessons I learned at OMB, probably maybe the only one, was exactly as you stated. If you put out a reporting requirement and then never look at what you get back, agencies will spend the appropriate amount of time responding.
Frank Reeder is has story number three from GovExec this week on the Federal News Countdown. Performance Czar asks agencies to spruce up spending data, and we'll have links to all of our stories on the Federal News Countdown this week posted at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later this afternoon. Bob, your story number three is about Vivek Kundra saying the current state of cloud utilization unacceptable. This is a story from Fierce Government IT, and it's about a presentation that he gave at the Brookings Institution this week. And just an FYI that we'll be playing this Brookings presentation from Mr. Kundra on the on In-Depth on Monday. You'll be able to hear that in its entirety starting at about 1 o'clock on Monday afternoon. What do you think of this presentation?
Well, the headline says it all. He's frustrated. He's been pushing this agenda for over a year, and he's seen very little progress. And he has over 1,100 data centers, and he believes that he should consolidate those, because if he doesn't consolidate, he's really not going to get the huge savings that come with consolidations. And this is a story that's near and dear to my heart, because in 2001, when I became the CIO of the United States Postal Service, I had 11 data centers, and I consolidated to two. And I know for a fact that the Brookings Institute report of savings 25 to 50% in savings, I achieved it. It's real. So it can be done. But if you think about this, you know, let's level set for a moment. The CIOs are responsible for running all the mission critical applications in an agency. And what isn't defined today is this whole cloud computing. The processes aren't really known. The security isn't really known. How do you compare the cost, et cetera? And we could go on and on. And so do you think that they're going to go from multiple data centers to just giving the responsibility and accountability for their mission-critical applications to an outside provider or an outside vendor, et cetera, where they lose control? It's not going to happen. What he really needs to do is think of this in phases here. He's got the right idea and goal for consolidation. And will it be 1,100 to 300 or 400? Well, they haven't worked all that out, but organizations like NIST and GSA are working on this for him, and they're doing a good job in putting all that stuff together. But I would tell you this, is that if he makes this happen, and not if he will, he will make this happen, but it'll take 3, 5 years, 10 years on some of this, we will save billions from the budget. So what he really needs to think about is consolidation of services and functions. That's one phase, and you can do that and get savings. Consolidation of servers and virtualization, and you can get savings from that. Then consolidation of applications, and then consolidation of data centers. All four of these can run in concurrent parallel paths, but you can't jump from multiple centers to, in essence, a cloud outcome, and then think that you've measured the savings. And one of the reasons that people are offering up some of these websites to go to cloud is just to be a token to make that happen. Today, they really don't save any money, because you've got to get critical mass of the applications moved over. But it's a great story.
Yeah, to jump on. I know you'd like disagreement, but I'm afraid I can't disagree with
I don't like it when it's fake. I like it when it's real.
But to add a footnote, there's a piece of this that hasn't been addressed, and I think another story broke this week. I think it was a GAO report on the vulnerability that we acquire when we move to cloud computing without thinking of the information security implications.
Mm-hmm.
So, there's an argument in the agency, certainly, for being a little bit cautious. That said, if anybody can move the system, I think Vivek can.
Are the agencies being too cautious, though, about the security element of it, or is there such a thing when it comes to
security? No, I've talked to 50 or 60 CIOs, and they really want to save money and consolidate, but they want to have a framework and understand what's going on. And today they can't see what it would be in security to be in a cloud. And when that all gets defined, and I truly believe it'll take 2010 to get all that defined by GSA and NIST and all these other people, then you're going to start seeing movement of these agencies.
All right. More on that on Monday on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. You can hear the entire presentation from Mr. Kundra at the Brookings Institution, a discussion of cloud computing after that, and you'll hear all of that on Monday on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. You'll hear more on this week's Federal News Countdown as we dig into story number two from Bob Otto and Frank Reeder. We'll continue the countdown in just a moment.
Federal IT and security managers increasingly must rely on integrated tools and techniques designed to minimize damage and protect their most valuable information assets with dynamic defense architectures. This environment requires routine decision-making to balance introduction of new technology with ongoing mandates for information assurance. Register today for the Integrated Threat Detection and Defense webinar, April 28th at 2 p.m., and plan to join this detailed overview of several traditional protection and computing strategies presented by seasoned security experts who will help you update your thinking about content security and data privacy, malware detection and prevention attack, and intrusion prevention. Go to digitalgovernment.com/events/webinars and select Identity Threat and Detection Defense. That's digitalgovernment.com/events/webinars and select Identity Threat and Detection Defense to learn more and to register today. Presented by Cisco.
And now Ask the CIO, brought to you by Vion Corporation.
Few agencies depend more on data to meet their mission than the Consumer Product Safety Commission. Patrick Weddle is the CIO of the CPSC and explains why.
When I say that's our currency, that's really what the agency trades in, all the way from at the beginning when we receive an incident report, all the way to the end when we put a recall out. So our job is to, our core systems really are around the program areas that support that.
Data is exploding in growth, usage, and retention. Count on it, and count on Vion to manage your organization through that change. Vion's file service solutions allow you to manage all platforms with an integrated management approach. This enables you to consolidate, protect, search, and archive unstructured data. With powerful technology partners like Hitachi Data Systems, Vion will help you regain control of your IT environment. To learn more about Vion's file services, visit Vion.com. That's Vion.com.
Hey there, I'm Christopher Dorabeck, and here's what we're working on for this afternoon's Daily Debrief. We'll wrap up our week-long series, HR Reinvented, by talking to former OPM Director Linda Springer about some of the challenges changing the government HR process. And a number of stories about how much feds make. What about salaries on Capitol Hill? We'll take a peek. All that and much more this afternoon, 3 to 7 on the Daily Debrief, with Chris Dorabeck and Amy Morris, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
We're back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest for the Federal News Countdown this week, Bob Otto, Executive Vice President of Advisory Services at Agilex and the former Chief Information Officer and CTO at the U.S. Postal Service, and Frank Reeder, founder of the Reeder Group and former Director of the Office of Administration and the Executive Office of the President, and a 20-year veteran of the Office of Management and Budget. And I do just want to make it official that there is no truth to the rumor that Frank has been nominated to take Justice Stevens' place on the Supreme Court. That's not accurate, right?
Absolutely.
Because it's been all over the wires.
Yeah.
Everybody's talking about it, of course.
And clarifying that.
And
thanks,
it's we're quite fortunate that you're here on this particular day so that we can kill that one.
Well, he asked me for my vote, so I don't know if it's true or not.
Well, and maybe we should talk about you then being in the United States Senate somehow, that you get a vote on the nomination to the Supreme Court in the first place, Bob. Right. This whole thing is just kind of getting out of hand.
Spinning out of hand.
Yeah, exactly. We are up to the story
number two
on the Federal News Countdown from Bob Otto, following up on the discussion that was actually your story number three, Bob, about cloud computing and Vivek Kundra, Vivek's predecessor, or the predecessor of his predecessor, Mark Forman, in a conversation with Fierce Government IT, along with Jeff Steinhoff, talking about federal financial management issues and some big changes coming in the realm of financial management in the government, according to this.
Yeah, in fact, it was kind of interesting to listen to these two senior federal retired management veterans talk about the real world and complexity of holding back government with this whole financial management. You know, they talked about closing the Federal Systems Integration Office and opening a new Office of Financial Innovation and Transformation. One might ask the question, what's going to be different?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is this just a name or an administration change? And then they both talked about, you know, the old office having made progress, yet they pointed out too much money was spent on ERP systems and the processes weren't compatible and the data quality wasn't there. I agree with all this. I see all this. But what I see, though, happening in this, it's sort of a shift with this new office. It's a shift in emphasis from the common infrastructure and ERP systems to a standard data and shared service model across the federal sector. But I don't agree with the emphasis of Forman and Steinhoff that suggest that cloud computing is the silver bullet. It's just an enabler and not the overall solution. And if you move bad processes and unclean data over to new technology, all you're going to do is see the results you don't like faster. So I really believe that there's a lot of good things that can happen from all this, but they need to standardize their data and services across the federal sector and deal with agencies that have independent financial autonomy limited. And with all that, they've got to implement this change management and mandate the use of shared services. Otherwise, you know, they've got another 5-6 years of virtually doing the same.
Frank, this is the kind of thing that, in my view, is driving the anger that we see among general citizens who don't understand how the government works. This is one thing, one program shuts down, another program's created to do pretty much the same thing, at least the appearances from the outside. It's named a different thing, and people start to think, why don't some of these things either work or just the idea of them be killed rather than rename something else and done in a different way? And I think that's, it's maybe not an accurate perception, but it's the perception that's out there.
Yeah, I mean, you're getting us into a broader philosophic question that I think is a valid one. I mean, certainly there probably aren't three people outside the Beltway who care about what either the Treasury or OMB, if they've ever heard of it, are doing in the area of financial management. But this is probably a small example of that. At the same time, this is a real problem, and whether, you know, sometimes creating a new organization or renaming an old organization can give impetus to something that needs to be done. Financial management has been vexed. In fact, my earlier my number three story really links to this one. Again, it's about getting accurate financial data in the hands not only of the public but also of federal managers. Our financial systems are exceedingly expensive. They are exceedingly duplicative, and they give us lousy data. A simple example that the public does understand is we don't know where our assets are, and agencies are constantly being beaten up for having unused or underutilized properties, for example. So I'm not sure I agree that sometimes renaming and reconstituting a program is a bad thing to do if it gives it new life.
Yeah, but if I'm doing business with multiple agencies, the way I invoice my work ought to be the same.
I think we're in violent agreement on that one, Bob. I think that we're spending an awful lot of money inventing unique financial management systems, unique ERP systems, when there, in the words of a former governor, there ain't a dime's worth of difference among the, at least financial management functions among the agencies.
But what's going to be the event, or what should be the event, or who should be the person who conducts the event that says, we're going to stop it and we're going to do it, Bob, the way that you're suggesting, which is everybody do these things that are uniform across agencies, uniformly across the agencies.
Well, I think this new agency has the charter to transform, and they can come in now and look at all the things that didn't work and standardize across the organization, but they have to have some teeth in the implementation that they didn't have before.
Well, and I guess that's what I'm getting at. What has to happen? Who has to give them the teeth to do it? And then what has to, we're back to accountability again, like we were talking about in the last segment. Who comes around at the end and says, well, did you do it? Did you do it? Did you do it? Where does that come from?
Well, there are two aspects of this, and I think Bob's hit on both of them. One is it's unduly costly from a federal expenditure standpoint, and also it's costly for those who need to do business with the federal government in having different systems or having to interact with different systems. I've got a somewhat simplistic view. It's one I've held, I hate to quote myself, but I've been saying this for 25 years or more, dating back to the Reagan administration Reform 88 initiative. I think in the area of financial systems, focusing on consolidation as an end is not the right answer. I think this office, one, needs to focus on standards, and then second, needs to focus on costs and say, if it costs agency one Y dollars per transaction and agency two Z dollars per transaction, why is there a difference? How do we get people down to the lowest cost? And that inevitably will drive consolidation rather than making consolidation an end of itself, in and of itself, which tends to run into all kinds of bureaucratic territorial imperatives, and it's the wrong conversation.
Story number two from Bob Otto on the Federal News Countdown this week is a Q&A with Mark Foreman and Jeff Steinhoff on the future of federal financial management. You can find that link later this afternoon at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. We'll dig into Frank Reeder's story number two when we continue on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We'll be back in a moment.
Kelly O'Donnell. The 89-year-old leader of the Supreme Court's liberal bloc is retiring. Justice John Paul Stevens has informed President Obama he will be stepping down at the end of the court's term this summer. The announcement is no surprise, as Stevens has acknowledged in recent interviews he's been thinking about retirement. On Capitol Hill, Michigan Democrat Bart Stupak will not be seeking a 10th term in the U.S. House of Representatives. The anti-abortion rights congressman has taken a lot of fire for supporting health care reform legislation, but says that wasn't the reason for his decision.
I voted against the war in Iraq, which wasn't popular with a lot of media, the print media in my district. I'm not afraid to do the tough votes.
Stupak says he's just tired after 18 years in office and wants to spend more time with his family. More pain at the pump across the country. AAA says the national average for a gallon of regular is up 6 cents this week to 286. More news at MSNBC.com. I'm Kelly O'Donnell, NBC News Radio.
The birthday sale at JCPenney isn't about cake and confetti. It's about saving on great style store-wide with over 200 doorbusters all day Friday and from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Saturday. Like women's St. John's Bay apparel. It's 50% off. Guys' shorts, 60% off. Happy birthday to us also means happy shopping to you. Go to jcp.com to see everything on sale. New look, new day, who knew? JCPenney. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Offer ends April 10th.
Right now, every time you buy something, anything with your Discover card, you automatically have a chance to win up to $1 million.
So if I bought brown loafers, I could win $1 million?
Yep.
A riding mower?
That too.
How about my morning coffee?
Uh-huh.
Afternoon coffee?
Sure thing.
Late night coffee?
You bet.
I kind of like coffee.
I can tell. Remember, using your Discover card could make you a millionaire. Learn more at discover.com. It pays to discover. Visit discover.com/giveaway for alternate entry options.
Checking your daily TSP ticker. The latest numbers from April 8th, 2010. The G fund is unchanged at $13.23. The F fund loses 0.01 at $13.55. The C fund rises 0.05 at $14.14. The S fund is unchanged at $18.57. The I fund loses 0.13 at $18.74. Your L fund's lower. The 2040 down 0.01 at $16.49. The 2030 stays at $16.22. The 2020 loses 0.01 at $15.94. The 2010 stays at $15.55. And the L income is unchanged at $14.16. Check your rates anytime, every day on federalnewsradio.com. Dimitri Sotis, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Are you accountable for improving efficiency and productivity? Then the 2010 DoD Service-Oriented Architectures Symposium is for you. Learn about SOA best practices and discipline from baseball's Ironman Cal Ripken, Union Pacific CIO Lyndon Tennyson, Apprentice winner Kelly Perdue, DoD Assistant CIO David Wennergren, DoD Assistant Deputy Chief Management Officer Beth McGrath, and many others. Be at the Crystal City Sheraton on April 21st and 22nd. Register at SOASymposium.com. That's SOASymposium.com.
Introducing HalfPriceDC.com, your gateway to the area's best restaurants, stores, spas, and more, all at half price. This week, HalfPriceDC.com has half-price gift certificates to Reston National Golf Course, Northern Virginia's favorite classic golf course, Fontina Grill in Rockville, delightful Italian cuisine prepared fresh daily, and Extra Virgin in Shirlington with a beautiful new patio for the ultimate dining experience. See all the offers at HalfPriceDC.com.
Hey ladies, it's time to break up with the bottle. I'm talking about your sticky, messy bottled foundation because there's a makeup that will treat you much better. Bare Minerals by Bare Essentials. And right now, you can try it risk-free. Just call 1-800-900-6737 in the next 15 minutes to find out how. Bare Minerals is naturally radiant and good for your skin. See, unlike other makeup, Bare Minerals offers complete coverage without fillers, oil, fragrance, or other irritants. It's so pure, you can actually sleep in it. Try it risk-free and see for yourself why Bare Minerals was quoted in Glamour magazine as a magic eraser and life-altering. We understand any breakup is hard. That's why we're going to make it easier to walk away from your old foundation. Call now to try Bare Minerals risk-free, and we'll also send you a free gift set. This is a radio-only opportunity you don't want to miss. So call 1-800-900-6737 in the next 15 minutes. Hurry, supplies are limited. 1-800-900-6737.
Hi, I'm Neil Asbury, host of The Neil Asbury Show. Please join me and my guests each week as we discuss the importance of international trade, entrepreneurialism, small business ownership, job creation, and the American dream.
The Neil Asbury Show, Saturday mornings at 8 on Federal News Radio. The Neil Asbury Show is sponsored by AIT Worldwide Logistics, Yoakum Shore and Trossaven, and WTS, Withers Worldwide Transportation Systems. The Federal News Radio Community Spotlight for April is the Washington Literacy Council. Did you know that the Washington Literacy Council has been working for more than 40 years to increase literacy rates of children and adults in the District of Columbia? Volunteers are trained to service the more than 200 students by using the latest research in language acquisition. The Washington Literacy Council's innovative approach to learning is keeping literacy levels of the nation's capital on the up and up. For more information, visit federalnewsradio.com, keyword events. We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, on the Federal News Countdown this week with Frank Reeder of the Reeder Group, formerly of OMB and the Executive Office of the President, and Bob Otto of Agilex, former Chief Information Officer and Chief Technology Officer at the Postal Service. And Frank, we're up to your story number two from GovExec this week, NextGov. The headline is Agencies to Unveil Open Government Plans Under President's Directive, and we have a lot of open government information on federalnewsradio.com.
But this fits with a lot of the stuff that we've already talked about on the countdown this week. And the first paragraph sums it up. The release of new agency rules and plans for using technology to create a more honest, accountable government could be the pinnacle of President Obama's commitment to transparency, say government watchdogs. The people who have been asking for this for a long time seem to be very pleased with what the agencies are putting out there now.
Yeah, so far. and I think if you poke a little bit harder on folks like the Sunlight Foundation and OpenTheGovernment.org, at this point, what they're really giving the administration credit for, and they should, is good statements of good intentions.
Mm-hmm.
Again, this is a hard problem. We are trying to change agency cultures in promoting much more civic engagement. Open government to me is not telling people what we've already decided. It's truly engaging them in the sense that, and we'll talk about this for a minute or so later, the Department of Homeland Security's Quadrennial Homeland Security Review attempted to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, it fits with this. So we can talk about that now. That's just out today, I believe. Is that
right?
That's
right. The final report of the Quadrennial Homeland Security Review and the National Academy of Public Administration report on that review, a panel that I headed, so I'm quoting myself again.
It's a trend, I see.
Today. Yes.
It's developing.
Since I haven't been nominated to the Supreme Court, I need to get ink somehow.
That's right. That rumor not true, by the way.
That is not true. This is a hard problem. It runs counter to culture. It also makes it – it complicates the decision-making process, I think, in a very positive way. Folks no longer can retreat into the back room, mm-hmm. and using their best and presumably sincerest judgment deliver forth results. There's a corollary story, by the way. I'm going to sneak in a fourth story, even though you hold us to three. OMB also announced on Wednesday two directives. They're actually signed by the Administrator for Information Regulatory Affairs, Cass Sunstein, creatively interpreting the Paperwork Reduction Act to limit some of the restrictions that agencies have been operating under, requiring them to get prior clearance from OMB for certain classes of citizen input.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't essentially give a free pass, but it does say that there are certain kinds of public participation that do not require OMB clearance,
mm-hmm.
and I think will go a long way to sweeping away some of the bureaucratic impediments to getting citizens engaged. But this, again, is a very hard problem. The administration's initial directive, I think, pushes agencies in the right direction. This is ultimately not about open government as an abstract concept. It's about an agency understanding how to reach out to its constituencies. And if you're the Social Security Administration, you're in a very different place than if you are the Department of Homeland Security, understanding how to reach those constituencies as Homeland Security did in the case of the Quadrennial Review.
Mm-hmm.
And being creative. And what I hope happens here is not only that the public will interact with the plans that the agencies have put out, but that the agencies will look at each other's plans.
Mm-hmm.
And through that, continue to innovate. This, you know, the use of social media, the use of more traditional media, not everybody tweets yet.
Mm-hmm.
Recognizing that not everybody has access to technology, the whole range of issues that arise if you really want to have truly open, truly collaborative processes.
Mm-hmm.
This just really demonstrates, though, how tough it is to get the balancing right between formulating social media policies and, you know, setting expectations on privacy. So I think this is a balancing act that's really tough for a lot of federal people to come up with at this point in time. But if you think about it, in the future, there's going to be – this social media is going to be part of everything that we do, and we better figure out a way to solve this problem.
How far along are we? I mean, are we headed in the right direction, do you think?
I think we are, but it demonstrates with even like this cookie decision of trying to figure out whether you should have cookies or not is honestly I think that this is something that demonstrates we haven't thought all the pieces and parts out.
Yeah, to amplify what Bob said, and I think he's, again, agreement is horrible. I know you don't like it. He's absolutely right. 10 years ago, under considerable pressure from the privacy community, of which I consider myself a part, the administration came out with a pretty strict policy limiting the use of persistent cookies. That mm-hmm. is, allowing websites to put on your computer, in this case government websites, mm-hmm. Traces of what you had done in the past, arguably so that you could be better served, so that I know that, in fact, you're Francis Rose and you bought the following 10 books the last time you, mm-hmm. you were with me. It turns out that that also makes it very hard to serve people if yeah. you have a policy that prohibits persistent cookies. So this administration has, shall we say, modified that policy somewhat. This is, to use a cliche, very much a work in progress. We haven't quite figured it out. I'm not sure we ever will. Where to draw that balance, where to make sure that in the name of providing electronic services, we're being so intrusive trying to authenticate you that we're violating your privacy, that in the name of trying to serve you better, we're putting persistent cookies on your computer that allow us to track what you are doing. These are all issues that deserve public debate. The third piece of this is, to the extent that one can, informing the public as to the choices that they have.
Mm-hmm.
That is, if I'm anonymous, I get a certain level of service. If I choose to have a persistent cookie, and I can make that decision in the settings on my browser, then I will get a better level of service, but at the cost of allowing people who do business with me to know more about me.
But the goal was to set a better service for the American public. And what we found out of all that is that the implementation of it can go beyond that. And where's the check and balance to ensure that I don't invade your privacy?
I apply to this the same thing that I apply to a lot of things, and that is the mom test. My mom is what I consider to be a fairly average American citizen, and albeit very intelligent, and for her generation, very knowledgeable about technological things. And if you posed to her the issue that you just suggested, she would have no idea what you were talking about and would not understand in the least the advantages or disadvantages therein, and barely knows what cookies are. And I know this because I asked her about it last week, because of this discussion that is being had. Is it possible, I guess, to run the risk of asking people too many things, asking them too many questions that they don't necessarily know the answers to nor care about the answers to?
Absolutely. And I think that's where the conversation needs to go to what's the floor. That is, what is the level of protection that we need to give everybody? And then the privacy catchphrase for it, allowing them to opt in for other levels of service, but not requiring them to become technical experts in order to do business with us, or to subject themselves to electronic strip searches to mm-hmm. do business with us.
We could probably do the rest of the show on this subject, and we've got to move on to story number one for Frank Reeder and for Bob Otto on the Federal News Countdown. That is Frank's story number two from NextGov, the headline, Agencies to Unveil New Open Government Plans Under President's Directive, and we have a ton of open government directive resources on federalnewsradio.com. We are back, as promised, for story number one from each of our panelists when we continue this week's Federal News Countdown on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
What is the Global Partnership Initiative? How is the U.S. Department of State leveraging private-public partnerships to achieve foreign policy goals? Listen next week, as these questions and more will be explored with Ambassador Elizabeth Frawley Bagley, Special Representative, Global Partnership Initiative at the U.S. Department of State, next week. Join host Michael Keegan next week on the Business of Government Hour.
One little fish oil pill. You know this powerful little pill is great for your heart, that it's great for your joints. It even has powerful benefits for your skin and brain function. But other fish oils of today are sadly incomplete because they don't contain vitamin D that can promote mood, energy, and bone health. Until now. Introducing the risk-free trial of Omega Berry with vitamin D and acai from Purity Products, our most powerful fish oil formula ever. The only thing our advanced Omega Berry fish oil is missing is the price. Because right now, we're offering anyone a full-size bottle of fish oil as part of a nationwide risk-free trial. Plus, the best-kept secrets to healthy aging, a free book. Just call 1-800-700-1605. To request yours, you can't go to stores. The only way to get your free trial and free book is to go to the phone. The number is 1-800-700-1605. Call now for your free trial. That's 1-800-700-1605.
Newsmakers talk to Jason Miller on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Joseph Gardner, the Deputy Director of the VA DoD Health Information Sharing Directorate within the Department of Veterans Affairs.
There was one case that was noted of potential mixed patient data between two different patients when only one had been requested. We are now producing a software test plan, which we would be briefing to the Undersecretary for Health probably sometime this week.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive.
Welcome back to Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's In Depth with Francis Rose, and you're hearing the Federal News Countdown this week with Bob Otto, Executive Vice President of Advisory Services at Agilex and the former CIO at the Postal Service, and Frank Reeder of the Reeder Group, former Director of the Office of Administration in the Executive Office of the President, and also a 20-plus year veteran of the Office of Management and Budget. And we are up on the countdown to
number one.
The number one story of the week from Frank Reeder is a New York Times story with the headline, Group Releases Classified Video of 2007 Baghdad Attack. And the organization behind this, Frank, WikiLeaks.org, has been the source of many headaches for people in the federal government. What's this one about?
Well, I imagine that most of your listeners have seen stories or stories about this story, and namely that this organization got the hold of a video taken from a helicopter that both shows the shooting of what turned out to be a couple of reporters and civilians, as well as potential hostiles from a helicopter, and the narrative that is of the helicopter pilot, the helicopter crew, chatting about it in a somewhat cavalier way that, you know, those familiar with warfare, fortunately for me personally, I am not, appreciate is part of being a combatant in today's world. My point in raising this is not to get us into the two-hour discussion about the ethics of what the pilot, the rights and wrongs of what the pilot did, or whether or not WikiLeaks is a legitimate organization, or there ought to be some constraints on the disclosure of this kind of information. Mm-hmm. I raise it because, from the standpoint of the folks who are likely to be listening to this, this represents the new reality.
Mm-hmm.
That regardless of what you do and where you do it, you need to do it with an expectation that it will be public. Whether you think it should be public is arguably irrelevant.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the best way to approach this story, Frank. That was what struck me as I read this to prepare for the program, is I have to admit, I'm amazed that there are people who this far along in the digital revolution don't understand that already, and yet we continue to see examples of people who don't seem to understand it. I mean, in this day and age, all three of us, I've said this a number of times on this program, all three of us probably have video cameras in our pockets, integrated into our cell phones, so that it's potential, the potential exists for every single person walking around to be his or her own news source or news service providing this kind of information. And I'm wondering what, if something like this doesn't get people to pay attention to that, I'm wondering what cataclysmic event has to happen to get people to understand it.
Well, I agree with what Frank said, and I think that a lot of the government managers really need to think about this movement of traditional media to social media and how that all works and what the implications are before, you know, things like this come about. So I just really believe there's a lack of understanding how this all transpires and the impacts.
It's incredible video. It's linked up through the story that we'll have for you this afternoon on federalnewsradio.com. And I agree with you, Frank. We can debate or not the rightness or wrongness of the attack and the leak of the video and so on and so forth, but it is what it is. And I think you're correct in calling that attention to it. Story number one for Frank Reeder on the Federal News Countdown this week. Group releases classified video of 2000. 2007 Baghdad attack, and you can find it at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Story number one from Bob Otto, and when we come back, and maybe the answer to a question that I've been asking a lot of cybersecurity experts over the last couple of weeks, we'll clue you in on that when we continue on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The latest from the Federal Security Spotlight brought to you by Cisco.
The internet will always be dangerous, but DNS security is a must. Here's Joe Waldron, product manager at VeriSign.
There are always new types of attacks that people launch, and DNSSEC helps us mitigate one of those vulnerabilities within the infrastructure that I think will ultimately help with improved confidence and trust that end users and registrants have in operating on the internet.
To hear the entire show, log on to federalnewsradio.com. Will the top-of-mind security issues of today be the issues facing government tomorrow? Get the latest from federal experts on FISMA reform, the cyber initiative, how government is combating botnets, spyware, and other cyber evils, and more. Listen to Federal Security Spotlight, sponsored by Cisco, airing Thursday from 10 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. or on demand at federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Security Spotlight is brought to you by Cisco, the leader in federal IT security.
In this unpredictable economy, how much money have you lost? Join me, Carl Balestrieri, each week as we tackle the tough situations you've encountered and offer solutions for protecting your money and weathering this storm. In some of my future shows, we will be exploring the truth about investing, some of the things that your broker and financial planners may not be telling you. Join me, Carl Balestrieri, on Federal News Radio, Saturday morning at 10:30 for Right on the Money.
Isn't it funny how just when you think you've had the best time of your life, life makes you think differently? Remember your first kiss? How would you top that? And that summer before college. But then college came and poof, you almost forgot those times you would never forget. There was the romance that swept you off your feet and the wedding that took everyone's breath away. And the only thing more amazing than how beautiful your babies were was what wonderful people they turned out to be. Well, guess what? If you think life just couldn't get better, we've got news for you. It can. And that's the best reason for getting a mammogram. At Kaiser Permanente, more women do. And that's how we know regular screens are one sure way to make certain you live long and thrive. You want to know what happens next? Go for your next mammogram and stick around. Things are going to get a lot more interesting. Kaiser Permanente. Thrive.
To learn more, go to kp.org/mymammogram. Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
For those dedicated to public service, meeting the growing expectations of the American people represents a challenge, but with smart project, people, and performance management, we can make the government more efficient. Hosts the Performance Institute, Federal News Radio, Federal Managers Association, GovLoop, IBM, and Young Government Leaders present the 11th Annual Government Performance Summit, May 10th through 12th at the Crystal City Hilton. Learn how leadership, measurement, and a motivated workforce drive results. Register today at governmentperformance.org.
Thanks for listening to the Federal News Countdown on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And my thanks to the panelists on the countdown this week, Frank Reeder of the Reeder Group and Bob Otto of AgileX. And we are up to Bob's story number one on the countdown this week. And I will say, Bob, I was very gratified to see this story choice by Tim Green of Network World, the headlines, In Cyber War, Who's in Charge? I've had this conversation with vendors. I've had this conversation off the record with CIOs and this is just in the last couple of weeks. And I get the same feedback over and over again, and it's pointed out in this story and in comments that we've talked about as we're getting ready to go on the air here. And that is that Howard Schmidt, the White House advisor on cybersecurity, is exceptionally competent, exceptionally knowledgeable, and able to do the job to which he's been chosen. The problem is the job itself and not the person occupying it. And this story that you've chosen raises the story exactly who is in charge when there is some kind of a cyber problem.
Right. I chose this story because I believe that the readers may not really understand the complexity and the implications and the impacts across the United States. And, you know, Tim pretty much hit on all the things here that says that in his grading of this, he finds things lacking. I mean, you can't have the head of National Cybersecurity, Howard Schmidt, reporting to two agencies and trying to figure out, you know, who's leading this effort. Likewise, you know, you have the role of DOD, the intelligence community, Homeland Security, private sector, and others, and those are murky at best to figure out what they're doing and how they relate to what Howard does. Another challenge is, well, what's the clear definition of what constitutes an attack? If we ever want to have international consensus to enact treaties and rules worldwide, we have to have everyone agreeing to this internationally. So it's really a challenge. But, you know, to add to all this, you've got all these people diverging their approaches on the solution of this. I mean, Schmidt has his own, DOD has their own information operations roadmap, and Congress is considering legislation on the Cybersecurity Act, and each of them have a merit, but, you know, they have incompatible points as well, like who will be protecting the private sector telecom infrastructure? Homeland Security? FCC? Who? So for me, I see with this cybersecurity a similar model of 20 to 25 years ago with computer security, where we built guidelines, but we don't provide standard solutions. We let each agency reinvent the wheel. And where every agency's tried to solve their own, well, we have varying degrees of success. So to this day, we really don't have the adequate proactive security in place. So how do we think that this cybersecurity model is going to be better?
Frank, we only have about a minute left, but this is a thread that I'm hearing throughout the things that we've talked about on the show today, and that is, at what point is somebody willing and or able to stand up and say, wait a minute, we've got to rejigger this, and we've got to do it now, and we've got to do it quick?
Well, Green's article cites the CNCI reports, which a declassified version of which has been released. I think that provides some useful suggestions. One is, I think some of the legislation would give Howard some real authority. That's part of the answer. Second, as Bob acknowledges, this is a complex problem, and it's not clear to me that the public is willing to accept yet a single solution, which probably would end up being in the national security community, because that's where, as a practical matter, the technical competence really exists. So absent that, we're going to continue to have a federated model with a what I hope is a real tiger, what is right now probably a paper tiger.